It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the Great Outdoors Show. Your host, Charlie Potter, here on WGN Radio. Thank you for joining me this morning. And boy, we're waking up to a morning that feels a lot more like early December than it does the latter part of October. We have Kerry Luft on the air, who's been a guest many, many times with me on the show to talk about conservation issues. And Kerry, thank you for joining us this morning on what is feeling a whole lot like early December at the time of the year when we still should be going out and seeing leaves fall.
Well, thanks for having me on, Charlie.
So, Kerry, I'm going to start off with not a weather report, but we hear so often, for those of you listening, you know, we talk so often in the fall and spring about the southward movement of birds. And Kerry, I have reports from friends all across the prairies of Canada as well as the northern tier of the United States, saying this is the earliest in anyone's memory of freeze-up occurring across the prairies of southern Canada and across the northern high line of North Dakota and Montana. Very, very early. You know, you deal in fall with a period that sometimes is 6 to 8 weeks, and that's it. And it looks like it's a good 2 weeks ahead. Means that everything from cranes to ducks and geese to songbirds, everything is moving south faster than normal.
It feels that way, Charlie. I was out lucky enough to be out this past week, and you're seeing birds that you normally don't see at this time of year. You know what that means, I don't know. I mean, as a northern Illinois duck hunter, I hope they stick around for a while.
Well, certainly this morning and, well, yesterday morning was the opening of the season in the central zone of the state, and they couldn't have had better weather. I know the reports of birds across the upper Illinois and Mississippi rivers are really very high, and the reason is because a lot of the birds are already here. So, Kerry, while we're speaking about birds, we talked a couple weeks ago about the federal duck stamp, and you and I, we kind of ran out of time. You and I both have been making the comments that the sort of arbitrary switch to from the historic duck stamp of picture of paintings of birds to one that includes a hunting scene has not been well received. And I thought you could just, you mentioned this week that you had some things to add on that, and maybe it's not an open and closed shut case.
Well, you know, Charlie, I think that the issue is not so much that of having a hunting-related image, it's the mandatory part of it, which is a new change brought in by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Look, it's well-intentioned. The Fish and Wildlife Service wants to promote hunting. But here's the problem, as I see it, Charlie. As much as we would like to deny it, the numbers of people who are waterfowl hunters and therefore are purchasers of the federal duck stamp are dwindling. And you only have a half hour show, so we don't have the time to talk about all those reasons. Maybe I'll come back another time and we could do that. But they're dropping, and it's my belief, and I think it's shared by many others. I'm not especially insightful or out front on this, that we need to expand the potential purchasing audience for the federal duck stamp, which, by the way, as you know, is the most efficient conservation program the government has. 98 cents on the dollar goes to creating habitat for waterfowl, mostly in the form of national wildlife refuges. Every state has benefited from the federal duck stamp. Anyway, Charlie, my point is, I would much rather see a reform where they said, "Boy, we encourage you to use a hunting image if it fits the theme, but not necessary." And this, I think, would not turn off people who benefit from the bounty provided by the federal duck stamp. You know, birders, people who hike on wildlife refuges, they're all riding on the backs of the duck hunters and the goose hunters who bought duck stamps. Wouldn't it be a better world if we could bring them under our tent and just have them appreciate and support the duck stamp program? Because certainly it's there for all of us, not just those of us who love waders, duck calls, and 12-gauge shotguns.
Well, there's also another thing. I'm listening with Terry Luck this morning. There's also another thing at play here. For a long time, there has been a sense that as you need to acquire, you pay a fee to enter a national park. For a long time, there's been a sense that entering our national wildlife refuge system, which has been largely paid for by the Federal Duck Stamp Program, that you should pay a fee to enter the national wildlife refuge to bird or do whatever you're going to do, and that that fee should actually be the purchase of a federal duck stamp as your entrance.
Why
fee.
Not? Why not?
And it makes great sense. It would raise considerable funds for the Fish and Wildlife Service. But then you go and put a hunting scene on it, and many of the people who are visiting our national wildlife refuges are probably indifferent to hunting. They may favor it, they may not like it, but they're not vocal. All of a sudden, you're making them buy a stamp that has a hunting scene on it. Is not a way to broaden the base.
No, it's not. And we've passed on from the day when we had 2 million duck hunters in this country. I would argue that the most famous duck stamp was a hunting scene. It's the famous painting of King Buck. I think it's 1956 federal duck stamp. King Buck, two-time national field trial retriever champion, owned by John Olin. He's a Labrador retriever with a mallard in his mouth. It's a terrific, terrific image. But, you know, that could still exist today. The point, Charlie, is that the new regulation, while well-intended, is forcing it. And I just don't think it's the right move at this time today.
We'll see what happens, but I thank you for sort of digging in a little bit deeper on this, and we'll continue to cover it for those of you listening in the next year, because I think it's possible that it will change. And if it does change, I'd like to think that WGN Radio had a little bit to do with that. So, Terry, while we're on the subject of the influence of every sportsman, here we are, you know, 10 days before an election, and nowhere in either Democrat or Republican Party platforms for the presidential candidates can you find anything to review with sportsmen and women for Biden or sportsmen and women, you know, for Trump, which, as far back as I can remember, those were staples of a campaign. And I personally was responsible for a presidential sportsman's campaign a number of years ago. I know what it's like. I know what it takes to organize one of those. And the very fact that there's nothing being said about it indicates to me that they probably don't even exist. And I find that almost unfathomable.
Well, they're there, Charlie, but they're not getting the traction that they have in the past. I know that there's a sportsman for and sportswoman for Biden committee. They just don't seem to be very active. I haven't seen much at all about a sportsman for Trump. I mean, obviously, we know that President Trump's sons, Eric and Donald Jr., are avid hunters, but I have not seen traditional sportsmen's issues being waved about much at all. And that's too bad, because there's a lot to talk about, not only in the hook and bullet arena, specifically as it pertains to access to lands, but also just the conservation controversies that we face in this country. You know, fracking came up at the last debate, whether that's going to go forward or not. And I think there's going to be a lot of, if there is a change in the administration, I think there'll probably be a lot of review of rule changes that came in under President Trump.
And I guess as we head to break here, Kerry, we also see nothing about the Second Amendment, which is we'll talk about when we come back from the break a little bit, but that too is showing that things are changing. The landscape is changing. I can't recall in my lifetime having debates or discussions between presidential candidates where the Second Amendment is not at least, you know, pretty much front and center. So maybe we pick up on that when we come back from a break. But as we leave this part, Kerry, I also have to think, you know, Field and Stream and Outdoor Life and Sports and Field, they were always interviewing presidential candidates and writing editorials and opinion pieces. Where has all that gone? Has so much influence gone so quickly?
Well, they wrote it. Outdoor Life has a long piece on their website that a couple days ago, if you want to go look at it, it's outdoorlife.com. But they didn't get to talk to the candidates. Instead, they talked to surrogates on both sides of the argument. And that's, you know, they do a nice job of presenting the point, but it's not the same as hearing from the person themselves.
Well, that's exactly what I meant. I mean, it was mandatory. I can remember as a kid, you know, Jimmy Carter sitting down, Ronald Reagan sitting down, and all the way on through. It was mandatory. If you were going to be the major party candidate, you sat down with the editorial board of the. You didn't send a surrogate. They wouldn't have let you do that.
That has changed considerably, and I think there's a lot of reasons for that. If you want to talk about those after the break,
well, let's do that. We're visiting with Kerry Luft, who always has interesting, very interesting views on conservation and the media. And thank you very much for being with us, Kerry. We'll be back in just a moment, as we will with some other topics. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. First, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers.
In the field, hunters need to be alert, sense the environment around them, and know exactly where they are, communicate seamlessly with their dogs. And when it comes to pickup trucks, you want the same qualities. The all-new Chevy Silverado comes with an available 4G Wi-Fi hotspot for seamless communication. It's designed to handle the toughest loads with advanced trailering technology, tough on the road and off. And the all-new design gives you more cargo space than the competition. Chevy Silverado is the most dependable, longest-lasting, full-size pickup on the road. Plus, there's never been a better time to see your local Chevy dealer about the Big Fix lease. It's an amazing lease deal that can lower your monthly payments and give you more Chevy, all for less money. That's a treasure hunt. So head to your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and see why Chevy is the number one best-selling brand in Chicagoland, now 8 years running.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Thank you for being with me this morning, and I have Kerry Luft, who is the Executive Vice President of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation, on the phone, who handles a number of conservation issues across America. And Kerry, we went to the break talking about sportsmen and women for Trump or sportsmen and women for Biden, and how this was previously, in most elections, that audience was really courted and believed to be important, and serious efforts were made. And it appears that this time around, not much. And I wonder how much of that has to do with quickly changing demographics, and maybe how much that has to do with what's going on with the NRA and the fact that we've had two presidential debates, and I don't believe there was a question in either one on the Second Amendment, which is almost unrealistic given you look at the previous 20 years and the history of that discussion. What do you make of all this?
Well, I think because of polarization, and I'm saying this without a pro or a con, I think because of the polarization of our politics, people for whom the Second Amendment is a preeminent position, they've made up their mind. You know, this isn't even an argument. You know, the NRA has been quiet. It's got some internal turmoil going on. It's under investigation in New York State. But the shooting sports industry, in the form of the National Shooting Sports Foundation, has expressed concerns about Vice President Biden and the Democratic platform. But the language in it
has been pretty standard for the last three cycles. Worries about bans on the sale of assault weapons, high capacity magazines, and et cetera. So I think that war has been fought, even though it hasn't been won yet. And I think the sides are pretty well drawn, and I don't think anybody's minds are going to be changed because of the party's position on guns right now. And the thing that I would tell people to look at, because I do think there are some pretty stark things to look at, is where are we going to go in the other parts of conservation that don't involve hunting, that do involve hunting and fishing, but they involve all of us. Wetlands protections, what are we going to do about alternative fuels, what is on the horizon for various mining interests. I would be very, very interested to see what the Biden administration would say about the Pebble Mine up in Alaska, which is a proposed copper mine that would decimate one of the greatest sockeye salmon breeding grounds in the world. And there's lots out there for us as sportsmen and women to be concerned about. It just isn't in our natural arena, and it's not as easy to find as it once was. More of a pity, because you used to be able to go to the big three magazines, as you say, see what the candidates had to say themselves. You're going to have to do some digging. It's out there. But take a look at it and look about things about access to public lands. Look at stories about clean water, waters in the United States. Look to see if the Biden what the fate of the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, which under the last administration has taken away any kind of damages for, let's say, collateral deaths of migratory birds through development with turbines and the like. There's a lot out there. So do your homework if you haven't voted already. There's lots of people who have already voted. But if these things matter to you, do your homework and be an informed voter. It's the best thing you can do for conservation.
Well, I think as we wrap up here, Kerry, a couple minutes left, the thought that I also have, and I can't help but have, is that as a total percentage of the population, while more and more people are visiting our national parks, our national forests, getting outside, and as we have seen as a result of COVID, unprecedented, absolutely off the charts numbers of fishing licenses, hunting licenses, park campgrounds, the whole thing. People are connecting with the outdoors as they actually might not have in a very long time. And it comes at a time when people aren't paying a lot of attention to the issues you talked about. So maybe in the next 10 days we'll hear more about it. But as you said, the best thing you can do, for those of you listening who I talk to each week, best thing we can do is to be informed, because it's a big decision, and this past year has had some of the biggest home runs in the history of conservation with bipartisan efforts, which surprised a lot of people, Kerry, but it has. What's going to happen in the next 4 years is going to have a big impact on how we can enjoy the great outdoors for the rest of our life. So, Kerry, thank you for being with me. I certainly appreciate it. Kerry Luff, the Executive Vice President of the Max McGraw Wildlife Foundation. Thanks so much for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.